Good.
Good. Good. Thank you. Okay. We begin. It's a great pleasure to have the speaker, Professor Guo Xin. Xin Guo in English order. Professor Guo is the Coleman Fund Chair Professor in Financial Modeling at the University of California, Berkeley, faculty member of also of UC Berkeley and the UC San Francisco, Precision Health Graduate Program. She is also director of risk analysis and the data analysis research laboratory. And an Amazon scholar. Her research lie broadly in the span of stochastic controls and games, mean field games, machine learning, mathematical finance, and fintech, medical data analysis, and the supply chain management. She has co-authored more than 70 research publications and a book titled Quantitative Trading, which has been translated in Chinese and Japanese. Dr. Xin Guo is co-author in chief of Frontier in Mathematical Finance and associate editor of many leading journals, including Mathematical Finance, Operation Research, Mathematics, and Financial Economics. She is also the co-founder and the co-chair of Women in Financial Engineering in USA. The title of her talk is Generative Adversary Model, an Analytical Perspective. Please.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah. Very okay, clearly.
Right? Yeah, okay. So let me start. Thank you very much, Professor Peng, for the introduction. And it has been a long time that many people haven't met in person. So it's very nice to see in screen and on screen at least. And thank you very much for organizing this this event and for inviting me. So what I'm going to talk about here is actually something not strictly SDE, but definitely the related topics in the sense that there's this very active areas in the last 3-4 years, especially in machine learning about this generative adversarial network, actually 5 years, I would say. And one of the things that has been striking me is that there are very little stochastic analysis on this machine learning tools. It's a very popular tool, as I will explain. And in the meantime, what we have been doing is trying to analyze this machine learning techniques from an SDE perspective. And then finally, we should see this machine learning techniques is very much related to many of our topics in this community, namely stochastic control and stochastic games, and also optimal transport, if I have time to cover it. And So this is a joint work based on my former student, Hao Yang Cao, and who is now doing postdoc at Eco Polytechnic. And also my former postdoc here, Osman Monjit, coming from Eco Polytechnics, and just recently joined Amazon as a research scientist. So let me start. Okay. So let's start with the first very gentle introduction about what is a generative adversarial network. It's a very popular technique, but I think it's not as well known in the community of stochastic analysis, and I want to spend some time to introduce it so that we are on the same page and especially highlight the mathematics behind it. And the issue, the focus of this talk is actually trying to identify from a mathematical or analytical perspective of this popular machine learning tools, especially namely the issues that is embedded in this stochastic games, if you look at this. And also when many people in the machine learning community are very well aware of this GANs training and associated algorithm. And whenever they do it, there's a lot of problems about the training process. And what I'm going to do is actually trying to identify this again from a mathematical perspective in terms of the convexity of the PR functions and also in terms of the fine tuning of the parameters. And then once I identify this, then immediately we would be able to show that as a continuous time approximation for the GANs training, immediately we can get into this familiar zone of SDEs, stochastic differential equations. And then once we have the tools of this stochastic differential equation approximation for the GANs training, then we can immediately formulate a control and game formulations of GANs training. And this really helps us to bring some contributions to the machine learning community from the perspective of stochastic analysis. And if I have time, I will touch upon this GANs trainings and the optimal transport. In fact, this last part, even if I don't have time, if I could explain well, you will already see it very at least at the very intuitive level why this GANs is actually closely related to optimal transport. Okay, so this is the plan. And so what is GANs? GANs was reintroduced, as I said, 2014, about 8 years ago, but slowly got the attention in the last 5 years, I would say. And in the last 3-4 years, especially in the mathematical finance community. And the idea was very simple. So it started with the generative models. And generative models is the bottom bread of statistics and or machine learning, where we're just trying to generate, given any images or given any distributions, I'm trying to generate a model so that I could generate some distributions that mimic the target that I'm interested. Okay, so that's a very generic and a very popular techniques, and it covers a lot of basic ideas in statistics and machine learning. So the ingenious ideas of Goodfellow and the co-author there is actually saying, well, there are recognized the problems of the generative models. And in order to improve the generating process, what they do is, instead of just looking at the generators, they introduce additional component, which they call discriminator, okay? And both of this, now, once you have two processes going on, then the way it's called, then it's very natural to see where the game is coming from. It's two processes competing. And the way it's called the neural network, and that's why I call the generative adversarial neural network, adversarial comes from this competing of two processes. And the neural network is that for each of the process, they use a neural network to approximate the underlying functions. And neural network, for those who haven't really worked on machine learning, neural network is nothing but functional approximations to the distributions in this particular context. And of course, when it comes to machine learning, then you have to think about how you design architecture, how you actually exactly design algorithms so that it can carry out or execute the ideas of functional approximation. But from a mathematical perspective, neural network is nothing but a functional approximation. Okay, so how exactly does it work? As I mentioned, so you usually will have a distribution, which I call PR, okay? So whether you take an image or you take any task, you will have, from a probability perspective, you always assume that there's an underlying distribution, what we call true distribution, or PR, real distribution, that represents the things you're going to achieve. And a generative network is basically saying, well, let's consider parametric functions or parametric families that is represented by some function g so that I can generate through this parameters, the families, a new distribution. And this is probability 101. We know that if you give me any distribution, I can always start with a uniform distribution and then the distribution of the true one, if you take the inverse of it, is exactly mapping the distribution of your interest of x. And here, you can understand it in a much general way so that you say, okay, I don't know what it has to be because I don't know the underlying f, but then let's hope that there's a parametric families that I can find. Then I can use that generated image. So that, this is called the probability distribution of these parametric families. And I'm trying to use this, that's what I call PG. I'm trying to use the generated distribution to approximate the true distribution. And of course, because G is now known, the way I'm going to do it is through the neural network. As I mentioned, it's a functional approximation so that I can approximate this family. If I'm successful, then I can really finish the generative network. So that's basically the first element of generative adversarial network, the first network. And the second one is really the ingenious way of the GANs, which is saying, well, to improve the work you're doing, imagine you're a student, you're trying to try very hard to do the work, to copy something. And eventually you have another person coming in, which is called discriminator network. And what is discriminator network is actually assign a score, or rather a distribution between 0 and 1. Again, there's another distribution here. Therefore, it's very natural to introduce a neural network to approximate this underlying distribution. And the task of this discriminator is actually to say that once you have a generated image, then what the discriminator is trying to do is just trying to see, compare this generated image, that's what we say BG, and the true image. And then I compare these two and see how close they are. Especially the way I do is to say that I want to see if the samples from this generated image, they are fake or real. And I assign a distribution, when I compare this PG versus the real distribution, as assign distribution between 0 and 1, okay? And the closer it is to 0, then the more probability that it's a fake. And the closer it is to 1, that means that it's more likely it's actually real. And this is a way of improving the task of generator network, okay? So then we call it D. So what you do is in this generative adversarial network, you iterate this process. Okay, so you say this is bad, and this is, so the generator and the discriminator network, they do iteratively, so that eventually, hopefully, this two neural network is going to converge. And if you think about it from a functional approximation perspective, you have two distributions, and what you want to do is you iteratively go about this approximation, and hopefully you eventually going to converge. Okay, so that's the essence of GANs, the generative adversarial network. And this is very powerful. It turns out that in machine learning, there's you can actually see many, many works that has been implemented through generating network, including people really create marvelous images that can really, no human eyes or even computers can differentiate the difference of the generated image and the true image. The Chinese saying is 以假乱真. It's really so powerful that it's very hard to tell the difference of between the real and fake. Okay. Of course, the discriminator network, when they cannot, the eventual convergence stage is where when the discriminator cannot differentiate to the fake and real, and usually that's when the distribution is close to 0.5. That's when the discriminator just give up, that it cannot differentiate. And as I said, because of this popularity of machine learning, and especially the GANs in machine learning, it's very natural for the mass finance community to get interested in it, especially the way that it is done in mass finance, to borrow the idea from GANs, is to think about, instead of in machine learning, machine learning community, when they think about the PR, the true image, or PG, they really view this PR as a computer vision. You actually take the image of the bird or image of anything that they think that is an underlying distribution behind it, and that's how you can carry out the analytics. Where in finance, what you actually think about, instead of the image, you think about the time series data, and then you assume that there's a particular form of images, and you assume that there's an underlying distribution behind it. And then you try to generate new time series so that it can capture the stylized fact of the old neural network, old time series. Of course, because of the difference of this financial time series data, which is time series, then the neural network has to be redesigned. And then also the comparison between the true image and the generated image has to be carefully chosen with appropriately chosen divergence function so that it can be tailored in the domain of mass finance. Okay, and in particular, there are, you know, if you are interested, we have written a review paper more from analytical perspective. You can get online, find it, or if you want, you can send me a message. And then there's another review paper which is really talking more about the particular difficulties of generated neural networks, GANs, for the time series generation. So this is very active, ongoing field of machine learning in mass finance. Okay. So far in our community, let's say the stochastic community or mass finance community, we more or less took the GANs as a borrowed tools. And very little has been done to really address the underlying mathematics in terms of GANs training. And in particular, anyone who has really done any data analysis or models to use GANs will immediately recognize that there are a lot of problems when you try to control these two convergence, two iterative processes, this iterative processes of these two network neural networks. We already know that if you think about functional approximation or just one neural network, there's always a problem of a convergence issue. Now, if you have two, and you think of this as a game of two, a competing games of two neural networks, you can imagine there's a lot, the whole new host of troubles that could come in because of the imbalance of these two neural networks. One goes too quick, the other one goes too slow. Or sometimes, if you think about the game perspective, the discriminator could be fooled by the generator. See, there are a lot of problems reported in machine learning community about the challenges of GANs training. Okay? And in general, it's really this game perspective of two neural networks, how you actually make it work. So it's not surprising. And to understand it or to actually cope with it, the starting point of understanding the GANs and the training is really put it in the mathematics and think about exactly what it means. So the first part that I talk about is really the intuition of GANs. And here I'm talking about, so let's take a step back and think about what is GANs. GANs mathematically is really a mean max game between the G, what we call the generator, and the D, two players, with the following objective. So the discriminator is trying to max his objective to really find the distribution, the comparison between the distributions and the generated distribution and two distributions. So he's really trying to find the difference. This is the generated images, trying to really make sure that is far away from one, which is the true images. And the discriminator generated task is really trying to have the opposite goals. And this is the payoff functions of the that has been appeared in 2014 of the original GANs framework. This is the payoff function. So it's a minimax game between the generator and discriminator. One is trying to get close of the generated image to be as close as possible so that it can fool the discriminator. And the discriminator is trying to really identify the difference of the generated images versus the true one. Okay, so this is the minimax. And if you take a step back looking at this particular choices of payoff functions, then you can see that if I actually, for this minimax game, if I fix G and then I do the optimization of the D, then you can quickly, it's less than 30 minutes work. You take derivative, you find out the optimal discriminator is actually the ratio between the density functions of the true images or the true distribution over the summation of the density functions of the real image and the generated image. And that's not stopping it. And then if I actually put this optimal solution back into the original framework, then you can quickly see that the whole minimax game just becomes very simple of this form. And then if you stare a little bit at it, then you realize that this is nothing but a divergence function, the Jensen-Shannon divergence function, which is the parameterized version of KL divergence between the two distributions and the generated distributions. So this is a very important, even though it's very simple ideas and mathematics manipulations, but this is what is underlying this GANs. Mathematically, it's nothing but trying to comparing or minimize the distance of the true distribution and the generated images. So this is message number one. And once you have this mathematical perspective, then immediately, okay, people say, well, Now we have a tool about it. Then maybe we can study these guns from a divergence from a probability distribution perspective. And very quickly, you realize that, wow, hold on a second. We all know that the divergence function, we have to be very careful in choosing them. For example, if you think about the Jensen-Shannon divergence functions, it's nothing but a parameterized version of KL divergence. But then we all know that for KL divergence, I take any arbitrary distribution P and another one Q. And in a particular, very simple example, if I take just simply a joint distribution of X and Y, where I take the Y to be uniform, and then I just make them sit on two different supports between 0 and 1, then very quickly, I see that there is a discontinuity of the KL divergence when actually I move theta from 0 and 1. Okay, so since you're doing parameterized neural networks, then if you see that if I have the parameter with respect to between 0 and 1, you can see the KL divergence is not continuous. And not only is not continuous when two distributions are disjoint, the KL can be infinite, and therefore it's not really well-defined. And even if you parameterize the KL divergence as a Jensen-Shannon, then you can see that it's still discontinuous when you actually take the theta at zero in this very particular case. So this is actually, whenever you have a problem, you identify a problem, that's also the beginning of the flying of the field. Because of this, then in 2018 or 19, there was this very, very, very nice papers that started to, and this is where it's really caught the attention of many people in optimal transport and stochastic analysis, is to say, well, there are many ways, not naive KL or Jensen's inequality distribution. There are, for example, Wasserstein distance that we know that it's a very natural choice to compare two divergent functions. Why not? And the Wasserstein distance is continuous and relatively smooth compared to the KL. And because once you take that perspective, then there's a whole host of the works is about this. Sorry, this 2017. This 2 years of pandemic already looks like it just flies. And then okay, so it's really 5 years ago that this is what we call the Wasserstein GANs, and we call W GANs distance. This is a very nice paper. For the first time, when I studied it, I could understand the GANs because of this paper, because it's written in the language that we can, from a probability perspective, could understand. The GANs is nothing but a trying to understand the divergence functions and then try to maximize or minimize the distance between these two functions and related to the choices of divergence functions. Okay, so that's one. And from then, there was this already increasing number of studies, as I said, from a theoretical perspective, that you can actually think about even GAN, since you have two neural networks that you're doing. So in fact, you can view it, this GAN, as a two competing games. And then when you have minimax games is very naturally connected to mean field games. And therefore, the GAN can be understood in the context of mean field games. This is a paper we wrote a while ago. And then from a machine learning perspective, once you have two neural networks, and you it's also very easily connected to the classical literature of reinforced learning, where they have the actor critique. It's the same idea of introducing two processes so that you can actually control the approximation in a more effective way. And then, as I also said, if you actually think about a GANs of as a distribution, generated distribution, and then it's a true distribution, and you're trying to compare this, then it's very natural if you think about this really moving the generated distribution to the true distribution. And then you view this divergence function as just a cost between this moving of true image or generated image to the true image. Then it's very natural to think about the connection of GANs with optimal transport. That's one of the things. If you have time, I will go over a little bit. But as I said, this is a review paper that we go over all the techniques, related techniques that you can actually take a look at it. And there are a lot of references in that, much more complete than the one I mentioned here. Okay, so this is what we actually are seeing from stochastic processes. And today, what I'm going to really talk about is really how this GANs training can be understood in the context of stochastic differential equation, how the GANs training can be understood as a continuous approximation framework, especially the stochastic differential equation, to approximate this GANs training process. And then there we can, as a stochastic analysis community, can make a contribution back to this machine learning community to say, okay, look, there are ways that we can use analytical tools to help resolve some of the well-known issues in the GANs training, okay? Because the GANs training has been notoriously hard. And so far, most of the work in machine learning has been focused on, fine-tuning, neural networks, architectures, or choosing different divergence functions, or doing some heuristics so that it make the convergence faster. And here we're trying to put it in a more mathematical framework to understand this process. Okay, how do we do that? So we talk about neural networks that are behind the generators of G and D. And the way it does is really training process is to take a data set that, this is the data set of ZEI that is behind the distribution you're trying to generate. And then there's also a set of data that you're going to use to compare that represents the distribution that you really want to mimic. Okay, so let's look at this. And instead of looking at the particular forms of the GANs, so GANs has changed, as I said, the evolution of the divergence function have been changed from the original forms to the very more general one. I take any of the targets or utility function that you take in this minimax game. I parameterize this neural networks that, or parameterize the G, the functions for the generator, that's called theta. And that parameterize, think about this as a functional approximation, use some parameter. I try to parameterize this for the discriminator. And then now the minimax game just naturally translated into this generator network parameter by theta, and the discriminator network parameter by omega. So now you're doing a minimax game of a given function G that parameterized for theta and the omega. Okay. And of course, in the special case, the G is going to take exactly what we actually did for the original vanilla GANs training. And now you can generalize it. The parameterized version now is actually to look at whatever the quasi convex functions to you choose, whether it's a Bartan's GAN or other forms of Bragman divergence or anything, you can replace it in a parameterized form, okay? Well, when you replace it and you really look at just the generic function of G parameterized by the families of omega, parameters of omega and theta, you realize that there is, at least just looking at the game perspective, is a minimax game And the Minimax game in the game theory has been very well studied by von Neumann. And then later on, there's the Xion theorem that basically says, well, if you really view this GANs machine learning technique's popular one, you know that in order for you to really has a duality gap, because you do Minimax game, this is just the, when you find the optimal solution for the Minimax game, it's really a the upper bound, because it's bigger than the max min game. And in machine learning, sometimes the order of Minimax and max min was not even taken care of. And then this could be one of the issues to be, one has to be very careful, because you cannot easily do min max and max min, and everyone knows it in the game theory. In this particular case, we know that you have to be very careful when you choose a parameter omega and theta. They have to have some constraints on complexity and the convexity. So if you have omega and theta properly chosen from compact and convex set, and if you also assume enough continuities of G and enough convexity in theta and concavity in omega, then you can be sure that there's no duality gap. Okay, so that's the first thing we need to remind those people doing it. And there, even there, that when you take a very simple case of Minimax game of XY, this is one of the pictures you generate, and you know that there's a Minimax game, you try to find Nash equilibrium, and even when you have a unique Nash equilibrium in this very simple case, and when you actually do the stochastic gradient algorithm trying to approximate the neural networks, well, stochastic gradient algorithm is nothing but a generalized version of Newton scheme, if you think about it. But still, in that case, once you have the Minimax, you already will see in this particular case that the zeros, it takes a long time and sometimes impossible. It just turns around and around. That whole algorithm doesn't converge. So maybe this is one of these alarm for us to think about in terms of GANs that we can bring in from a game theoretical perspective. Maybe there are convexity issues that people didn't really pay attention. And indeed, we actually took a look at some of the very popular parameterization methods. So this is people use very easily, just some two layers of neural networks. One is, you know, two layer, just meaning two steps of the neural network. If you actually think about taking a linear parameterization, this is for generator, and I took two steps. One is the linear generator, the other one is sigmoid, that is also very natural, very simple activation functions in neural network. If you compose it, and you just take this very simple two simple composed neural network, one is linear, one is sigmoid, you take these very special forms, you already see that this neural network, the formula of the D and G, already the assumptions in the Xion theorems of the convexity and concavity break down. Okay, I'm not going to go through the analysis here, but you're welcome to take a look at the paper we studied. So there's a fundamental problem there. Not only you have this convexity issue, and also when you really put a neural network, there is a problem here. And also when you actually do stochastic gradient algorithm, then everyone knows this. When you take even for a very simple quadratic functions of this, and then you can easily find the minimal of this. Well, the gradient algorithm, which this, you know, gradient algorithm is nothing but iteration with the given learning rate, and then take the derivative of the value functions. This is a gradient algorithm. If you continue doing this, then very quickly, and if you take the error function of the L2 forms, and then you continue doing the iteration, you already very quickly also see that when you choose the wrong learning rate, then this algorithm doesn't converge. So I can go on and on to write issues A, B, C, D to say that in general, GANs training has a lot of problems in summary. One is people, when they implement neural network, this is the convexity issues that really break down this minimax game and the Nash equilibrium thing. And the other thing is if you have the inappropriate choices of learning rate when you design algorithm, the whole thing can blow up. It's no wonder that there are so many problems in this GANs training that people have encountered. So this is really brings us to this page that I'm going to talk about, our work of how we can really bring the stochastic differential equation tools and also the control formulations to really tackle some of these GANs trainings from an analytical perspective. So to do that, we know that many people doing machine learning knows that there are several parameters that key hyperparameters when you actually do GANs training. One is the learning rate, just as I mentioned, it really shows how fast you're going to do the algorithm. And the faster the bigger the learning rate, the faster, but then on the other hand, it also has more probability of explode. And the batch size, the second parameter is the batch size. Batch size is about the number of training samples you used in your algorithm, in your gradient estimation. Of course, in machine learning or in data sciences, everybody knows that the more training sample, the better. However, with more training samples, it's definitely going to hopefully give you more accurate estimation. On the other hand, you have a much bigger computational cost. So there's a control there already you can think about. And then it's also the third parameter, which is the time scale, is really how frequent you update the variables of your underlying parameters, theta, omega. The more updates, the better, but then it's also slower. Okay, so this is also, you also accumulate, you accumulate more of the cost, and also it could potentially create more variance. Okay, and what we actually, I'm going to focus here is only on learning rate. There are many parameters here. And of course, when you do the training, you usually fine tune all these parameters increasing non-monotonic way, and it can be coming in a mixed way. And so it's complicated. And in fact, we could show that the time scale controls is very much related to your learning rate controls. Okay, of course, how fast you move and how many number of updates when a given time, you can imagine these are two related things. But what I'm going to talk about is really just here emphasize on the learning rate just to show everyone how we can do. So smaller learning rate, of course, we have empirical studies to show that smaller learning rate and batch size reduce errors and oscillation, but we can actually show also that the control of time scale is equivalent to the control of learning rate. So that's why I'm going to just focus on learning rate. Okay, how do we do that? How do we really come as a control people to study this beast of GANs training? So let's start. Suppose I know that I have two neural networks that I need to do approximation in a stochastic gradient algorithm. Suppose I have a starting any initialization omega and zero. So I have a GANs, we have a G neural network that is actually mean. So I'm going to update the generator and decreasing it. And I have a discriminator, which is actually the max. So this is actually increasing. So I'm going to do this two iterative stochastic gradient update. And then the learning rate here is with respect to the generator and the discriminator. and the generator. Okay, and for now, I can think of them to be equal. Okay. And if I look at this, in no time for people coming from stochastic processes, we can already see, well, it should be able, we should be able to write instead of the discrete form, we should be able to write this in a continual times approximation ways. And that's exactly what we did 2020, that you can write down a coupled SDE approximation for the GANs training, where the gradient, the diffuse, drift term is actually represented by the gradient of the function G, and also the diffusion terms is also written or approximated by the covariance of the gradient of GW and G theta. And then you can see that I can write it so that the two Brownian motion that driven this coupled SDEs are independent. And when we derive this, we of course think about the learning rate to be constant, okay? So that's the first step. So you could write, the first step is to write the continuous time approximations for the SGA algorithm for this GANs training. Now, of course, this is a WT and theta T is the approximation, is the time evolution of your parameters. It's a pair of it, okay? And now, when I actually think about adaptive learning rates, so we know that in GANs training, the parameter has to be adapted. The learning rate, subconsciously people do it, but they don't put it in a in an analytical framework. The way you can think of this is really that you usually, what you do is you have a predefined learning rate, okay? And what you are adapting is around this basic learning rate, you usually adapt it according to this base learning rate, and you adapt it through the learning process. And of course here, the underlying adaptiveness is with respect to the Brownian motion in this approximated process. And in general also, that your adaptiveness is not going to be crazy. You're usually bounded by some constant, let's say U max, okay? And it turns out in machine learning, people do, how do they choose this upper bound? Is they choose a, what they call clipping parameter. And this is a heuristic way that people have been using for years to actually, they show it, it's quite effective to control the explosion and also the convergence of GANs training. So here we borrow this, and then we will see, interestingly, this heuristics, we will show that this heuristic really is tied to this the convexity and explosion issues that we showed earlier in the simple example, and we actually can show analytically how it is connected. So this is actually a control. I introduced a control that really controls the learning rate in the underlying SDE. I have already an underlying dynamics where the control is embedded. It consists of two things. One is the learning rate, the adaptive learning rate for the generator, and the other one for the discriminator, okay? And so when you have this state dynamics, then I can put this in back to this modified, the coupled SDEs, and then the learning rate here is all assumed or in this, appeared in this dynamics here. Okay, don't forget, this is the adapted. So this is the base learning rate where we put a bar, and the UT is the one that I'm going to have the control. Now, you see, this is the base, and this is the control that appears in both the drift and diffusion term. Of course, I have to be very careful. Once I get into this field, I need to make sure that it's not going to be a degenerate control, then it's going to cost me quite a bit of trouble. And hopefully the first step, we can assume that, put enough assumptions so that we don't have to deal with the tricky issues of degenerate stochastic control. Okay, so now I have a control dynamics in terms of the learning rate, okay, for both the generator and the discriminator. And then I can rewrite this original payoff function in a minimax game, which is really, instead of replacing this parameter theta omega by the time t of the training sets, hopefully that at the end I can control my training. So now the minimax gain of this j is replacing the original g theta omega, basically by taking expectation, because I'm actually now having the stochastic processes, and also I look at the terminal training. My goal, I play this game, and then hopefully at the end of T, then actually I can look at the training result. So there's nothing I really did except for re-massaging and reformulating this original minimax game of GANs. Now, if you look at this, then there's plenty of things we can do. The first thing is we can show the dynamic programming principle. We can actually establish the weak form of dynamic programming principle for this minimax games. Of course, this is adapted from this Bouchard and Nizar's earlier works on the weak dynamic programming principle. And the other thing we could do is, again, to show under proper regularity properties, this value functions is actually the unique viscosity solution for this Bellman-Isaac equations. And this takes less than, you know, half an hour to actually really to go over it and then to write it down. Okay, so this is from a control perspective, now we can put this GANs training, in the familiar framework that we have been dealing with. It's a toy that we have been working on for many years. So we're happy about it, okay? Of course, then a more tricky question for people to ask is, well, for machine learning to really use, you can formulate in whatever the way you want, but what they would really care about is, does it help them to really see our framework, really have some interesting insight for it? And we could, in fact, show, it takes a little calculation to show that if you assume enough regularity, especially the C21 regularities, then you actually can show, you can explicitly solve this learning rate of the adaptive learning rate in form of the gradient and the lambda of the value function. And of course, this, well, your solution is actually in terms of the value function is not as explicit as what we would have liked, because we would like to see, in fact, the value function itself. But interestingly here, it served a purpose for machine learning, because what it really shows, without knowing exactly the number, what it really shows is the learning rate does take the form of Banban type. And this Banban type is very much related to this convexity of the value function. And that's exactly what people have been using in machine learning, and they didn't really see why they have to do this clipping. And we actually have it, even though we didn't, you know, it's still in terms of the value function, but that's sufficient for us to convince them this formulation of control formulation really give us good insight, okay? So I'm not going to go through the derivation, because really the stochastic control perspective, once we formulate it, is rather straightforward. But the important thing is what we could do in our formulation is really to show that the heuristic practice in machine learning, in GANs training, the clipping parameter people use when they choose the maximal learning rate is really related to the convexity issue that we pointed out when you have the problem of Gans minimax gain, and that's really true. Analytically, we can prove that's the correct way to do. And also, if you choose some particular form of the learning rate, the controls, you can also tie it back to the standard Newton algorithm. So this is what we actually have really achieved in doing the approximation of this SDE approximation of Gans training and formulating a control problem, and how this is tied to the minimax gain, how the convexity issue is related to the solution that we derive, okay? And how the learning rate really is the improper choice of learning rate that leads to the explosion of this of the Gans training is also tied back to the convexity of this minimax gain. So everything is now coming into one place and settled mathematically. Okay? And I'm going to show you a little bit the numerical experiment actually just to verify what we show, that in fact, when we did input our optimal learning rates here, it clearly shows that when we do the learning rate, our algorithm really converge much faster than the traditional way. Okay, I'm not going to draw on it, and I just want to spend just one, maybe 2 minutes about another interesting perspective of GANs, other than we can use the SDE approximation and control formulation to understand GANs training. There's I alluded earlier about the connections of optimal transport and GANs, and it's also an interesting thing to see that GANs training is about moving and comparing the divergence distance between the generated distribution and true distribution. And now if you actually really think about this, either generated image of G and the true distribution of what you eventually have, then you can clearly see that there is a very intimate relation between Gans training and optimal transport. And of course, the optimal transport is with Monge's formulations of trying to transfer the initial distribution mu zero to this other distribution, and then you actually trying to minimize the cost related to your transport. Okay, this I don't have to report. And the connection to really establish this, formalize this connection of GANs with the optimal transport relies on this duality formulation result of this KR duality that says that the primal and dual problems of the optimal transport problem are equivalent when you have enough proper conditions on the transport cost C. And this is the reason you think about primal dual is the optimal transport problem right from the beginning can be formulated as a linear programming problem. Okay, and that's the discrete version of the very beginning of the optimal transport. And what we actually show that indeed you use the duality theorems, you can really tie GAN, at least for the Wasserstein GAN, or in general, as long as there's a duality that you can establish between the cost functions of the optimal transport problem, then you can establish the connection of GANs with optimal transport problem, in the sense that the discriminator is nothing but to locate the best couplings in optimal transport under a given generator and a coupling pi g. And the generator is nothing but to refine the set of possible couplings so that the infimum becomes zero, which is his goal to really differentiate the true and the real and the generated distributions. And this proof, the key idea of here is just one line. As I said, if you rewrite the GANs game as a minimax, and then you assume enough regularity of your payout function f, and then you use the the duality, you rewrite this one, and then use the duality to rewrite it in this coupling form, you can see every connection here is barely hidden anywhere. And this connection can be generalized to any GANs, assuming that the corresponding optimal transport has a dual representation. But in general, in a very simple case, when you do Wasserstein GAN with the W1 divergence function, you can clearly see the distance between generator is written in this way. And the original GANs is this way. And these two are equivalent once you establish you have the duality representation. Okay, so I think I probably should stop here. And this is, if you're interested, there are a lot more details covered in this review papers that we published. And then we have a few papers that currently under review or already revised for some journals. If you're interested, you're very welcome to either look on the archive or send me a message, then I can send you a copy. And I stop here and thank you very much for your attention.